Okay. We'll start with a very hearty group here. Thank you for coming back and showing up. Much appreciated, and names have been taken to know that you really are supporting this committee. I'd like to call this meeting to order of Legislative Affairs, Research, and Innovation. Would you please call the roll?
Trustee Robert Boy.
Here.
Trustee John Butler.
Here.
Trustee Wheeler Coleman.
Here.
Trustee Robert Marshall.
Here.
Trustee Tim Struthers.
Here.
Board Chair Mark Strauss. Trustee James Zanayed.
Here.
Committee Chair Sherilyn Muir.
Thank you. We have, what do you call that in baseball? Substitute hitter or something? What do you say that?
Yeah.
What's the term?
Pinch hitting.
Pitch hitting. All right. Pitch hitting. for Mr. Blakemore. I take it that all appropriate notices are have been given. Would you please confirm?
Yes, Madam Chair. We have a quorum, and I've been informed that the university did provide appropriate notices for the Open Meetings Act.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. May I have a motion to approve the committee agenda as proposed? Do you have a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion's approved. May I have a motion to approve the minutes of the February 18th, 2016 LARI committee meeting?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion's approved. I do want to welcome any University Advisory Committee representatives here. Greg, I can always count on you. Thank you. And Dr. Dan Gebo, is he here?
He left.
No?
He had a 12:30 appointment.
Okay, that's fine. Do you want to make any comments in regards to this committee?
Sure, thank you for the opportunity. Two things very quickly, and one will not come as any surprise. The budget impasse would just reiterate the impact that has on GA support and faculty productivity as far as our research agendas go. So we're doing our best with the limited resources, but it does present a challenge to us. And then the other more specific issue I just wanted to bring to your attention is the Faculty Senate of NIU did pass a resolution at our last meeting to express our concerns to Governor Rauner and the Illinois State Senate regarding the appointment of John Babinek as the faculty representative to the Illinois Board of Higher Ed, with a comment that he doesn't represent the will of the faculty and would not represent the intent of the faculty, wishes of the faculty, or of the public institutions in Illinois. He has no higher ed background from the standpoint of being a tenured track faculty member. So we, as our Senate, University of Illinois has raised the same concern that to have someone in this position who has not been one of us is disrespectful and does not acknowledge the issues that we deal with as tenure track faculty.
Well, I commend you for taking such a stand if the issues are as substantive as you've identified.
Yeah. Thank you. Sadly, I think they are.
Any other comments? Okay. I want to identify any members of the public who have complied with state law and Board of Trustees bylaws by registering their written request to address the board with our parliamentarian. Are you aware of any such requests?
No, I am not, Madam Chair.
Good. Thank you. All right. We're going to try and do two things today. We're going to try and give this committee the time that it needs to deal with the issues that are really important, not only to the committee but to the university, but we are also going to try and be respectful of time and see if we can almost get back on track. Our agenda today includes, as we usually do, state and federal reports. What I'm very interested in is the quarterly report on sponsored activities, and I think that Dr. Blasey is going to also address prospectively the impact of sponsored activities and where this may be taking us in a trend. So I look forward to that comment. And as you know, we try and highlight a program at each of our committee meetings, and today We want to look at the research being conducted at the College of Engineering and Engineering Technology. And I'd also like to make note, given that we're focused on engineering today, that I was pleased to see that the oil company, Mobil Oil, was it, that did the commercial with our students?
Shell.
They're repeating that commercial again. And that's pretty cool because that was done last year, and to see it again, they're just repeating the same commercial. And they've been doing it pretty prevalently in the last month or so. So that's very good for NIU, and it's a good reminder of the work that we do at this university. So, I have constantly asked one thing of Mr. Mann, and that is to bring us good news. And I'm ever optimistic, and so we'll see what he does for us today.
Great news for you.
All right. we get to vote on the value judgment of great, but
yeah. Thank you, Chair Muir, members of the board, President Baker. If I could turn your attention to page 10, table 1, I will start out with some good news. You'll recognize this table. It's budget development table that I've shared with you in previous meetings, which is hard to read up on the screen, but in your books, you can turn your books sideways. This table walks us through the FY15 appropriation and the revised appropriation and the various proposals. The last column is the General Assembly approved and the governor signed an emergency stopgap budget for higher education a few weeks ago. You'll see in that final column, the FY16 emergency budget provided us with $26.4 million, not a substantial amount of money. It represents approximately 29% of the last funding level we received in FY15. In other words, our base appropriation for FY15 was the 91,092.7. A few weeks ago, we received 29% of that, about $26.4 million. The reason that bill moved forward and had bipartisan support is because a specific funding source was identified for that partial budget. It was the Education Assistance Fund. That bill received, like I said, bipartisan support. The governor signed it. The funds have actually been received. So we have actually received that money. And then subsequently, you'll note on the table also at the bottom line that the monetary award program from ISAC also received $169 million in that emergency bill. That provided enough funding for ISAC to process first-term MAP grants for our students, for students statewide. And we recently received those funds as well, which amounted to $9.8 million. So that's kind of where the good news stops. If you notice in the far right column, you'll see most of the institutions, the emergency budget reflects a 71% reduction from last time we received money. You'll notice Chicago State is at a negative 44%. The stopgap for them provided them with about 55% of their last budget. So as a result, a second proposal came out, a stopgap budget number 2. And it's like most sequels. It's not as good as the first. It's not reflected on this table, but the stopgap 2 would provide the universities, with the exception of Chicago State, it would provide the other universities with funding to get us up to that approximate 55% level that Chicago State was at. For us, that would be another $24.8 million. The stopgap 2 has stalled, though. It passed. The Senate passed it by an overwhelming majority of 55-2. It has gone to the House, where it was referred to the Assignments Committee and the Rules Committee, and now it has become a shell bill. We are keeping our fingers crossed that that's a sign that there may be something. The working groups are working on some sort of possible K-12 higher ed budget for 16. Hopefully 17, that may go into this shell. So we'll see. Well, that's one of the things we're keeping an eye on. Another thing I would like to bring your attention to is that The House has passed another bill, House Bill 4167, which provides the monetary award program with an additional $227 million. That amount of funding combined with the $169 million in your table would bring MAP up to a full funding level. And if that bill were to make its way through the General Assembly and be signed by the governor, that would close out FY16 MAP awards for all of our students. So those are the two things we're keeping track of right now that are in specific pieces of legislation that we can track, we can support, we can monitor. The grand bargain or the big deal that the bipartisan working groups are working on, we know some of the framework, but the details have not been hammered out yet. And there are 10 session days left until the end of until adjournment date. So we are hopeful that despite the rhetoric that continues from both the Speaker and the Governor, we think that the behind the scenes, the working groups are working together to forge some sort of solution to help put together some sort of 16 and 17 deal. And we're remaining as optimistic as ever, and we are working as hard as we can with everybody we can to help something get done.
Before I ask for questions, would you give us a clarification?
Sure.
How long do you think the legislature will be in session? Do you think they'll go beyond the May 31st date? Will they go into June?
Right now, the response to that question is probably it's not likely. There are two national conventions this summer. This is campaign season. The governor has publicly said that if they did not finish their work by May 31st, that it's likely he would call a special session. I haven't heard that from anyone else yet. So I right now, just my personal opinion is the likelihood of that happening, not great. The comment we hear more often is that if something is not done by May 31st, then nothing will happen until after the election, and nothing substantive will happen legislatively until January.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Mann on the state basis? John?
Would a special session alter the voting threshold, such as a veto session, or would the voting threshold still be 51% passes legislation?
After May 31st, it becomes a supermajority required, three-fifths
of what you call it?
Yes. Which shouldn't make that big of a difference. Anything that's going to pass now will almost requires a supermajority anyway, unless it's an agreed-to bill that's got bipartisan support. So.
You didn't do too badly, but you didn't meet my expectations.
Oh, here's one other sliver of good news.
He's trying, though. He's trying.
There's a substantive bill that would prohibit colleges and universities from asking prospective students about their prior arrest and criminal conviction history. That, despite Northern's opposition to this bill, the bill flew out of House committee and it passed by strong numbers in the House. That kind of woke up the other colleges and universities. So in the Senate, this bill has stalled in the Senate committee, Senate Higher Ed Committee, because there are universities, law enforcement agencies and officials, general counsel's groups, working with the Senate committee to explain to them how this would impact our campuses and our attempts to maintain the safety and security on our campus. So,
all right, thank you. Dr. Baker, do you have any comments in this regard? All right, thank you. Dr. Anna Quider is with us today. Is that correct?
She's.
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, are you going to be on the screen? We'll see.
Our technical team, if it can happen.
There you are.
There you are. You're looking wonderful.
Oh,
congratulations
thank you.
On your baby.
She is doing great.
Wonderful.
She's almost 8 months old. In fact, it's kind of funny. She's a federal fiscal year baby, born October 1st. So the surgeon I delivered through C-section, and the surgeon thought that was a pretty DC wonkish nerdy thing to say when she was born. I was like, it's the federal fiscal year, you know, new year. This is great.
Well, we're just glad you have a very healthy baby, regardless of calendar or fiscal year.
Yes, no, she's very healthy. She's wonderful. So thank you. Thank you for asking.
Well, we're glad to have you back on screen. So would you give us your report, please?
Sure. Well, thank you all for the opportunity to be here today. I look forward to being there in person for the August meeting. Today, I'm going to follow the structure of the Federal Relations Quarterly Report that's in your briefing book. As with last quarter, congressional attention has been largely directed to the federal budget and fiscal year 2017 appropriations. While the majority leadership in both chambers has been very interested in getting back to regular order and passing all 12 appropriations bills through the House and the Senate and getting them to the president's desk, I hate to say I don't have a lot of great news, sort of following on Mike's footsteps here. Partisanship and a number of the challenges relating to the presidential election year and the condensed congressional calendar have all are making it increasingly likely that a continuing resolution will be needed to keep the federal government open in the beginning of FY17, which is October 1st. We expect that what I'm hearing right now is that it's going to be a short continuing resolution and that we should be getting an omnibus spending bill probably in December, which is also what we saw last year. Including the week of May 16th, so this week, the Senate has only 59 working days and the U.S. House of Representatives has only 46 working days remaining before the elections on November 8th. So this creates a very practical constraint on what Congress can actually accomplish in the rest of this calendar year. Despite these challenges to progress in the appropriations process, NIU has been very active weighing in with our congressional delegation on our priorities for fiscal year 2017. We worked across campus to submit 15 different appropriations requests to our congressional delegation this year. Those requests covered 9 agencies, which are the National Science Foundation, the National Endowment for the Humanities, the National Endowment for the Arts, and the Departments of Commerce, Defense, Education, Energy, and Health and Human Services. And we're unfortunately, the currents that are working against the appropriations process are also working against the authorization process. So we don't expect to see much legislation that affects policy for NIU's equities passed out of Congress this year. And unfortunately, that includes passing the Higher Education Act reauthorization. So we're hopeful that a lot of work has been done so far on reauthorizing the Higher Education Act, which controls student financial aid and other types of equities that NIU has. We're hopeful that a lot of that work will carry over and be picked up by the new Congress in calendar year 2017. Switching gears, the Obama administration remains quite active despite entering the last 6 months of their tenure. Some examples of that are that the U.S. Department of Labor just this week issued a final rule regarding overtime compensation for salaried employees. The main change that they made in this new rule is that it raised the overtime qualifying income threshold for full-year salaried employees. They doubled it from the previous threshold, so the current threshold is $47,476, and that goes into effect December 1st. Another example is just last week, the Justice Department Civil Rights Division and the Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights released guidance that advised schools, including universities, of the application of the Title IX rights to transgender students. So I think that we should continue to expect the administration to really be leaning in on their policy priorities even as they close out the administration. And finally, Federal Relations continues to work closely with our federal agencies and the congressional delegation on building relationships and showcasing NIU's leadership in education, research, artistry, and service. So you'll see in your briefing book an entire page outlining the various visits that we've had here to D.C. in the past quarter. So in summary, for the 2 months that end from the end of February to the end of April, Federal Relations hosted a campus visitor in Washington, D.C. on average once every 10 calendar days. Visitors included Dean Chris McCord, 5 faculty, and about 85 NIU or NIU-hosted students. In total, the visitors met with officials from three federal agencies, three members of Congress, as well as staff from eight congressional offices. In addition to hosting folks from campus and building relationships and getting our message through on an individual basis, Federal Relations has also recently facilitated two high visibility national opportunities for NIU. The first in March saw NIU students and faculty participating in the Super Science Tuesday national video campaign, which answered the question, why should science matter to our presidential candidates? This video, along with an accompanying op-ed co-authored by Vice President Jerry Blasey, was viewed at least 50,000 times across the country. And in April, Professor Mike Papka from Computer Science presented on Capitol Hill at the Coalition for National Science Funding annual exhibition and reception. Over 200 attendees from congressional offices, federal agencies, and the science and higher ed community were present, and that includes NSF Director France Cordova. I'm always happy to discuss federal issues, or please consider myself a strong resource for you in navigating the increasingly stormy federal currents that we're facing nowadays. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna. Any questions? Anna, I do have a question for you. I would anticipate that you and your colleagues are thinking about strategies to implement depending upon who's elected president, but even more importantly, not only who is elected president, but what party is going to be elected with this on the coattails of a president. So I take it, I would hope that you're giving some thoughts and contingency plans from a strategic perspective regarding the transition that we'll have in November.
Yes, and in fact, I am on the board of directors of a national nonprofit called the Science Coalition. That's a group of 65 research universities across the country. And through the Science Coalition, I will actually be meeting with representatives from the Trump campaign as well as the Clinton campaign to talk about the equities for higher education and specifically scientific research for the next administration.
Good. I think we need to continue to do this and have at least have some strategic direction, knowing it's going to be transformational in 2017. Okay.
I agree.
And I do have one question for Dr. Phillips in regards to the comments by Dr. Quieter. Related to the rise in the threshold related to overtime, has your office done an analysis of this? I know it just came out, but do you think that's something that's going to financially impact NIU?
Yes, substantially. Our estimates are for 300 positions, that would be roughly $2.8 million. And if it impacts for supportive and professional staff, which is 302, that's $2.8 million. For civil service, it's an additional $201. Roughly 500 employees, total cost of roughly $5 million.
Okay. And given that this was not anticipated, I take it there was no forethought on this as we were looking at budgeting.
We have strategies to deal with that, but it's something we're going to have to look into in more detail. We did not know exactly. We anticipated this, but we didn't know what the actual cutoff was going to be and what the ruling was going to look like. And so now that we have it, we will dig into it in more detail.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
And I could add on that.
Yeah.
So we have been active in advocacy regarding the impact of this rule on NIU with our congressional delegation, as well as through our associations, particularly the Association of Public and Land-Grant Universities. So I know that the administration, as well as the Department of Education, is well aware of the challenges facing higher education with this rule. Unfortunately, it's an irresistible messaging point in this politically charged environment with the elections. So while we were engaging, I think that the currents were just really strongly against us in being able to get some relief from this.
Yeah. I do want to make note, though, that my comments did not reflect either support or non-support of this because it benefits individuals. My question was more procedural. Have we identified what the impact would be? So I think that's important for us to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Okay? All right. Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Anna. Stay
well. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. All right. We're going to turn to Dr. Blasey, who will give a report on a summary report on research activity.
Yeah, in your on page 13, you'll find item C3, which is our usual written sponsored programs administration report. And I'd like to thank Dara Little for putting this together. However, I did want to make some comments because it's a little different than our normal report. Because besides providing recent quarterly sponsored activity, the report presents information on sponsored activity since 2011. So it gives you a bit of a more of a history than you're used to seeing. Before I get into that, I just want to mention that for this quarter, the January through March quarter, faculty received 45 awards totaling $3.1 million. The cumulative funding through the third quarter is $17.2 million, and a conservative estimate for the full FY16 is $25 million. On the longer time scale, and you'll see that on page 14, due to appropriations and the American Recovery Act, sponsored funding hit an all-time high in fiscal year 11. But with the termination of these programs, funding has settled down to a new base level around $30 million since FY12. FY16 will be down a bit to the estimated $25 million, and that's what I wanted to speak to. We don't fully understand the reduction and are working to better diagnose and respond to this. We do have data. We just need some time to analyze it. But in general, two large grants have been completed, and there has been a 25% reduction in applications. Some of the strong tides Dr. Anna Quiter referred to are at play here. There's a reduction in the face of federal sequestration caps. Of course, there's a poor fiscal climate here in Illinois. And in response to that, we are seeing reductions in faculty number. So within the division, we're working on a number of ideas to strengthen the university research mission. This includes increased training, preparation of our faculty, a search to reduce unnecessary impediments, finding mechanisms to increase faculty time for scholarship, and development of strategic plans with each college. So we're on top of this. We know it's happening. We're trying to diagnose it and at least stabilize it, hopefully turning it around. Thank you.
Before we have our presentation, I would like to make a comment in regards to your report. I think that we all know all the reasons why things are difficult, and we've certainly iterated that all morning long. We understand, and we've spoken of this climate in Illinois. We've spoken of the climate and the turmoil in the country. But regardless, we are a research institution, and that's who we are, and that's our mark, and that's what we need to continue to protect and promote. And so understanding that in order to achieve this goal, the path is much more difficult than it was in 2010 and 2011. But again, regardless of this, we have to stay committed to the fact that we are not a technical school in our focus. We are a research institution in terms of our primary focus. And that takes the support of every dean, that takes the support of every faculty member, that takes into account the interest of our students. That takes into account the leadership that Dr. Blasey provides and the work that you do with the with your advisory committee, which represents the colleges. So I would ask this, maybe a culture change, and I've used that word this morning, a culture change. Rather than talking about the difficulties, let's try and identify the opportunities, because every single university, every single research university is facing the same thing. And that is whether we're talking about Stanford and MIT or we're talking about NIU. It doesn't matter. The same topics are probably expressed in San Francisco, Palo Alto, or Boston. We have to stop repeating the difficulties. We all know the difficulties. And perhaps this is an opportunity for greater creativity and collaboration. Collaboration in the identification of, if not government sponsorship, private sector sponsorship. And sometimes it's easier for the private sector to support research, whether whatever type of research is relevant to their company, as opposed to a philanthropic gift. And for us, that may be even of greater value and longevity to us than a flat-out grant. So we really need to coordinate with our foundation. We need to coordinate through the president's office, the provost's office. We need to have the leadership of our faculty senate. We need to continue to identify not all the reasons why it's hard. We'll stipulate to that. We want to be the ones who figured this out, but we cannot lose sight of the fact that we are a research institution. That is critical, and that's the whole nature of this committee. So thank you for allowing me the time to make comments.
Chairman Herr, may I make a comment or two?
Yes, please.
So thank you for that endorsement, and we certainly agree with you. I just want to point out at this time with the program prioritization, we are in an excellent position to respond to your suggestions. We're looking hard at many opportunities. We're looking for in the colleges and interdisciplinary opportunities. That those two documents have almost made it easy to pick out some of those things, and we will start pursuing them. On the commercial side, we are actively engaged in conversations with a number of industries, both locally and internationally, and trying to build that portfolio as well.
Good.
Thank you.
Good. So I will give you the same challenge as Mr. Mann.
Good news.
to bring us good news,
okay,
and increased funding in our sponsored programs. All right. We have today the opportunity to hear what is occurring at the College of Engineering. And Mansour, please forgive me because I'm going to have a difficult time with your name. Dr. Tahir Nazadi? Ah, I'm working on it. Will give us a presentation, and Professor Federico Schiamarella, so that's better than far, will talk about advanced manufacturing, and we'll hopefully have technology working for us in this regard. So we're going to try and keep this presentation, both presentations, to 20 minutes if we can, all right?
All right. Total.
Thank you. Total, both. In total.
All right.
Yeah, so 10 and 10.
All right. But thank you so much. I would like to express my sincere thanks to the board as well as the senior cabinets for giving College of Engineering and Engineering Technology an opportunity to provide you with a brief overview of its research endeavors and programs that we have been advancing, I would say, ever since 2005, when we emerged from mostly teaching now into research. And we have gained considerable traction, I would say, since 2010 in terms of quadrupling our research productivity. We used to produce about $800,000 to $1 million. Now we are more closer to a $4 million a year research enterprise. Of course, the question that comes to mind, how do we turn challenges into opportunities? As Trustee Muir, you indicated, we have to be always mindful of the opportunities, and challenges are always there. And we have to basically work as a team, both in the college as well as across departments, as well as with RIPS and Provost Office, to gain more and more traction on the research front, because at the end of the day, the institution is known for its research excellence, and that's where we can bring more and more productive students and highly accomplished students to the institution. So that's something that we all need to work together, and that's what I've been trying to establish within the college in terms of teamwork mentality, both within the institution as well as across other institutions, such as Northwestern in our backyard and University of Illinois, to make sure that we are submitting collaborative proposal, and that would basically increase our chances of bringing external funding. And also, I welcome your emphasis with respect to industrial partnership. That's one thing that we've been doing within the college for the past, I would say, 5 years. In particular, we established the Engineering Residence Program. Our Department of Industrial and Systems Engineering has been very successful in taking traction, and I think to date they have in excess of 80 contracts with major as well as small to medium-sized enterprises for engineering residence program. College of Engineering and Engineering Technology has been very responsive to the mission of the institution in terms of advancing its research, partnership, and innovation. In particular, we have excelled in three major clusters of research. One is being advanced manufacturing, which Dr. Federico Chimerla is going to talk extensively in his presentation. Another one is engineering education. I remember that last year Dr. Brianna Collar did a presentation for the board, and he was also part of the presenters for the Olympic team, Winter Olympic team, that was sponsored by NSF. Also, yesterday we had the workshop where we had invitees from MIT and Northwestern in the realm of remote laboratory access, which basically lends itself into the Internet of Things. And we're thinking about that we could perhaps rally a major cluster of our faculty, both within the college and outside the college, around the Internet of Things concept, in which the remote laboratory access is a small portion of it. So basically, the remote laboratory access is extremely important in terms of us providing a synchronous mode of modality for our students to learn. A lot of the students, they want to learn on their own time, on their own place. And so basically, within the engineering, laboratory access has always been a problem. We're trying to establish the College of Engineering, Engineering Technology in Rock Valley College and at RVC, and remote laboratory would be one big issue that's going to come to forefront going forward. So we're trying to gain more traction on that. Also, we've been very active with respect to active noise and vibration control, and that particular area has been very important to us. We had a couple of patents in that area with respect to electronic pillows, also mitigating noise within infant incubators, because research has shown that if the noise levels are so high in the incubators because of the closed enclosure that's within the incubator, it would cause resonant frequencies that are damaging and undermining infant hearing. So we've been working with Invictus in that particular ground, and as a result, we submitted phase one STTR to NSF, and together we received $240,000, and they're now embarking on the second phase, and there's a pending application, which NIU is going to be intrinsically involved with that. In terms of our research productivity, from 2012 to 2015, we have produced about $13.7 million, and that basically represents 11% of the total NIU production. And to put it in perspective with College of LANS, we're about 29% of that total. And then college has also been very active in terms of providing and identifying resources for its faculty to advance its research. We've been working closely with RIPS to provide our faculty member with laboratory development needs that they need in order to secure more capability to advance their research. In particular, like 4 years ago, we received about $320,000 when Provost Freeman was the VP of research, and that basically enabled us to receive a major grant from NIST, which Dr. Federico is going to talk about shortly, to the tune of $2.4 million in partnership with Northwestern. So, and we were one of the two institutions nationwide that received that grant. So that basically shows that NIU has the capability and has the intellectual power to become more and more research productive, and that's something we are extremely cognizant of, And although we have the big elephant in the room with respect to the sequestration and measure of that sort, but those things should not be no daunting tasks. So I think the sky is the limit in terms of what we can do together. And I think together is the key thing going forward. And Dr. Blasey has been extremely helpful in providing us with resources going forward. We're trying to put together a research, a strategic research plan in terms of our hiring. In the past, our hiring has been exclusive towards what, in terms of meeting our needs with respect to teaching. What we're trying to do now is to turn the table and making it, how can we advance research? Which areas are most conducive in producing external funding and bringing faculty members that can not only work within their own discipline, but also work across other disciplines, especially with sciences, biology, chemistry, and so forth. So basically, we are mindful of those things, and we will push those agendas forward. Also, we've been very active in making sure that our faculty members are filing for patents. So I did a count. We have approximately 10 patents that filed. We have about 5 that are pending. And in addition, licensing agreements that we have in place right now with Invictus, which I mentioned earlier, also with Reliance on easy machining of hard material, which is being led by Dr. Federico. And also we have a long-standing relationship with Tagnetics in providing RFID for products on the shelf. I don't know, a lot of you probably have been to Whole Food Market, and that's one of the biggest market for Tagnetics where they sell their products. So at this point, if there are no questions for me, I would like to give it to Dr. Shimela Federico to talk about his research initiative in advanced manufacturing.
Let's see if technology works.
Okay, well, I guess, hello, I'm going to share my screen here, if you just bear with me.
Federico, we can hear you.
It says connecting. I'm not sure if it's connected yet.
I always get concerned when we talk about the great advancements we've made in computer science and technology. This type of thing always bothers me a little bit.
Okay, I think we should be okay now. Did the screen finally appear?
All we see is your smiling face.
Oh, okay. Well, let me go.
Okay, why don't we do this in the interest of time? Why don't we just have a verbal report from you in regards to manufacturing?
Hang on. Do we have Federico's slides? So, Federico, we'll put your slides up.
Great, yeah. That would be great.
And will you call them out, and we can change them?
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. So,
okay, so your first slide is up, Federico.
Oh, great. Okay, so again, I just wanted to, like Mansoor, thank the board for giving me this opportunity to present. It's really an honor, so I just wanted to share a little bit about what we're doing in additive manufacturing. And before I ask to go to the next slide, I just wanted to bring your attention. On the top there are all these logos and symbols and what they represent in terms of where we've come from and where we want to be in the future. So we are proud members of America Makes. I'm actually on their roadmap advisory group, which is partly in charge of setting the national course on where R&D efforts and additive should be headed so that we improve the U.S.'s position in this technology area. We've been very active with things like the STEM Cafe and ASM regional chapter, talking about additive and working on training and development. And as well as the NIST program that Mansoor mentioned, that logo in the middle, I'll talk more about that later, that has not only put us on the national map, but also on the international map, and I'll talk more about that. And then finally, on the top right there, this Enable community, which is an amazing group of individuals from all over the world that use 3D printers to create 3D printed hands and arms for those in need. We're doing a project on that right now that I'll talk again more about later. So this gives you a quick overview of what we're doing. You may have heard the term 3D printing, so I use that interchangeably. It's kind of the same thing. This is where you're producing parts layer by layer. And so what I want to do now with this presentation is give you a little bit of the motivation behind the choices we have made in our R&D efforts at the college and where we plan on going from this point so that hopefully in the future we'll have your support. So if you go to slide two then, there's no surprise that additive is the hot topic and people are talking about it all the time. And here's just some basic data from Wohler's report. And the bottom line is, it is at its highest it's been in the past 18 years. I know the stocks have been beaten up, but if you see the investments that Alcoa, $100 million, GE, new plant, $200 million, America Makes, over $100 million. So there's a lot of investment in this technology, not just in the U.S., but internationally. So this is really pushing things forward. If you go to slide three, the next one in particular, you can click through it. There will be a image that shows up. Metal additive manufacturing is really where the most of the growth has been going. It's actually doubled in the last few years, and they're really feeling that the sky's the limit. And the example there, this titanium bike frame that was printed in one machine, shows where you can have basically mass customization so that if people are trying to create something, they can mass produce it but also customize it at the same time. And by the way, there's a video later if anyone wants to look at it, instructional video that we put together for the NIST project that talks a little bit more about the basics of 3D printing. So if we move on to the next slide, it brings me to where I want to just compare traditional manufacturing and why it's such a game changer when we talk about additive. The first thing is you really don't require expensive tooling to make these parts. So if you have the printer and you have the good knowledge base, you can pretty much make whatever you want. And that's kind of where we're at with this, is getting that know-how. The other interesting thing is you're not really limited to traditional materials. And in fact, you can make new materials that are even better than what's currently available. And that's another thrust area, again, I'll mention briefly at the end, where we see a lot of value add. So if we skip to the next slide, slide five there, this is really talking about how additive pays in the industrial sector and why companies like GE, Airbus are betting heavily on metal additive. So those two parts on your right that you see are perfect examples that when you're looking to reduce weight, so in the air industry they call it in the buy to fly ratio, where you want to reduce the weight but increase or maintain the strength of that part, additive is the way to go. Those two parts, as you can see there, they've actually sometimes saved up to 50% of the weight while making them stronger. On the left, bottom left there, you see where it says LEAP fuel nozzle. You may have heard this in the news. GE has spent the last 5 years developing this. These are for their LEAP engine, which hold 19 of these 3D printed fuel nozzles. They're going into the 737 Boeing and the Airbus A320. This was specifically designed for additive, so they went down from 20 parts to one single part. So they've reduced their part count, but not only that, they've improved the performance and efficiency of these parts. They're giving it a 5x increase in lifetime. So here's where it really comes mind-boggling with regards to just this one part. They're going to ramp up to producing more than 40,000 of these by the year 2020. And so imagine, this is just one part for one engine, what will be happening once other companies like Airbus, which I think today was quoted as in the next 2 to 3 years going to be producing about 30 tons of metal in additive manufacturing parts. So going to slide six, this is why we've made additive in metal the focus at our lab, because we see and saw the potential where the university could position itself for creating value and wealth. So what you see here is the image on the left of the prototype that was donated to us. This is a direct energy deposition system. It's about 12 years old. And honestly, thanks to the support of RIPS, when Lisa was there at the time, and the college and their vision, with some support, as Mansoor mentioned on the right, you'll see, and it doesn't look very different, but those upgrades, I think the support was about 70K, really made a difference, because I wouldn't be here today talking to you about these programs had it not been for that support. So obviously, that being said, I wouldn't be a professor if I didn't say this. It's on its last legs, and if we wish to push forward at some point, we're going to need to invest in new equipment and potentially replace this system so that my students can sleep better at night. So the next slide, slide 7 here, what I wanted to do is just quickly provide some examples of some of the cutting-edge research that we've done and the impact that's had not only for the college but the university as a whole. This current slide shows our printing 3D printing efforts in copper, just straight copper, and tool steel on copper. And if you click the slide, you'll see kind of there's a 3D printed part there, and then it's machined down. This was actually something we made for a project that was funded by OSU. They had a larger Department of Energy project. They did not have anyone that could make this part for them, and then they heard about us through our contacts at OptiMec. And so we managed to secure this contract and successfully produce this part for them without having any in-between material. And it technically it doesn't matter, but what you need to know, we're one of the only institutions that are able to do this kind of work. And so this hasn't gone further as of yet, but we have definitely plans to continue to market this capability. In the next slide, slide 8, again, just to kind of show, we've been doing work on tungsten. This is also a very difficult material to work with. Not many people can do it. We're one of the few that can do it. We got about $140,000 in funding from DOD. We didn't get much follow-on from that. We probably need to see where what we could do, and it may have just been a question of, you know, those kinds of projects end abruptly, and we just need to follow on with that. But there are other markets like the nuclear industry that are interested in this particular alloy and where this technology would be advantageous, so we need to maybe dig in those areas as well. This brings me to my next slide 9. This is the NIST MSAM project. And really what I want to say that, you know, this has been a great experience overall, not just, as I said, for myself, but if you look at the outcomes, and that's really what I want to focus on, you know, because Mansoor mentioned we were one of two awardees. They were actually supposedly going to only award one, but they were so impressed with our proposal that they found extra money to fund our program. But this has also given us an international impact, and again, I'll talk more about that later. But you can read there, at least 12, I think it's 15 undergraduates that have worked or are working through this program and getting experience. We had one graduate with a master's. In fact, that student now is employed at NIST in their additive program, and a current student that was doing his BS just finished and is going to start his master's and is interning at NIST over this summer. We do have 3 potential patents. We've kind of put that in hold due to the current economic environment, but we will continue to pursue and work out all the details so that when we're ready to go, we'll have that information ready. The next slide is another great outcome of this project. We've designed this end project and workshop that's actually occurring next week, May 23rd and 24th. I welcome any of you that want to attend. It's a free event that has a little bit of time, maybe Monday afternoon, to see more. It'll be a bit more technical, but the great thing is NIST is going to be there, and some of the head decision makers from NIST are going to be there because they're really happy with the outcome of our project. We have over 60 participants, including companies like Caterpillar, GE. Obviously, Northwestern is co-hosting this with us. But we think this is going to be a great opportunity because on the following day, NIST is holding their workshop on direct energy deposition, which is what we do, and the future R&D needs in that area. So this gives us a voice to kind of lead where other potential funding opportunities might happen, at the same time showcase our skill sets and capabilities. And really what I want to use this, as I said, as a springboard perhaps to create a local cluster additive expertise that has been asked or requested by other individuals, and perhaps using this workshop as a launching point for that. So this brings me to my last slide, which I want to just talk about some few things in terms of our past and present opportunities. On the third bullet there with Northwestern, we are now going to enter into a new program with them that they are now taking us as a subcontract for the Digital Manufacturing and Design Innovation Institute project, which should be starting this summer. And as I said, we've created a global name for ourselves. So I just came back, fifth bullet point, IMS International. I just came back from a workshop held in Barcelona. This was for an international AM cluster. So we've just created a research group in titanium, which is another material that a lot of people are looking at, to work at and target international opportunities for funding. So I am the U.S. representative in this effort. There are also other areas of clusters in that international group that I'm going to connect our current faculty with in areas, because I can't be everywhere at once. So I'm going to get them dialed into that. I'm also still working with the CSIR and the Autonomous University of Mexico. I'll be there in June presenting some of the work that we've done, and we're looking at bilateral agreements both with CSIR and UNAM through NSF, with the University of Mexico, and through other international collaborations with the CSIR. We are also focusing our efforts on a future call from the Office of Naval Research. This is Quality Made. This will probably be FY18, but we are already constructing our group for this. This will be a very big group, the NCMS, GE, a lot of others, where we feel we could be the lead role in kind of putting this together. And then Oxergy is another small company from Alaska that heard from us through through NIST, that wants to build that part that you see on the right, and it can only be done through additive. So they reached out to us, and we're working on some STTRs now that are coming. If you click one more, I think a picture should pop up. This was very quickly what I wanted to talk about, that Enable project.
Dr. Schiamarelli?
Yes.
Yes. Hi, this is Sherilyn Muir.
Yes.
You know, this, what strikes me is that this is such an extraordinarily fascinating and important topic for us, and it is very pragmatic in terms of how we're taking research and we're translating that into really service to country and community. What I would like to do at this point, especially given our time limitations, is ask you to do two things for us. One, I'd like you to be present at our meeting in August and continue the rest of this presentation. But I'd also like you to perhaps have a discussion with Dr. Blasey and perhaps even the provost and the dean to talk about how this 3D manufacturing has impact opportunities here at the university. What came to my mind is you could take different schools and colleges and talk about additive manufacturing. What is that impact from an anthropological or sociological perspective? What is the impact from an economic standpoint in terms of positive and negative? Lowers costs, but does it cause in any way unemployment? What is all the transfer of this? And looking forward, I think from an educational institution, we can also start to be predictive in terms of the consequences, both positive and negative, as this becomes really a mainstay. But I want to thank you very much for accommodating us today. And I do want to invite you to our meeting in August.
No problem. I was actually done. I was just going to talk about that. So thank you so much. Definitely, I've appreciated everything, as I said, that RIPS has done, including now Jerry. He's been awesome. And Mansoor and Pramod have really been allowing me to do all these great things. And, you know, I haven't done more only because I'm one person. But if I could replicate myself, believe me, we'd be even farther than we are now, because this is an exciting time to be in this area. And I feel that with all the tools and assets we have, we could really grow this into something unique for our college, for the university, and as you pointed out, not just engineering, but the other disciplines, which is, by the way, in part of my longer-term plan
to create
a gen ed course in that area. So thank you very much.
Thank you. So we got it. You're asking for more staff and better equipment. We hear it.
Yeah, and try it.
Just line up. Thank you very much. Most appreciated. Okay, good. I think this wraps up our committee meeting, unless there are any comments from my colleagues. Thank you very much, Mansoor, for representing the College of Engineering and your remarks. Thank you, Jerry. Our next committee meeting is set for 9 a.m. on August 25th. May I have a motion to adjourn?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We stand adjourned. Thank you very much.